You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole. And I'm so excited that we're here. I'm just not sure if we're really doing this right. Do you think we planned well enough? I'm not really sure. Christy, take over.
I have, what do you call, ennui?
Oh. So you're bored is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we are so excited to be back in the 602 Club as we've headed back to the theaters to see, the number one movie in the world, Inside Out 2. This movie has taken the box office by storm, and we are going to talk all about it. Want to thank everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. Please find us wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe. You'll get the episodes as soon as they come out. We'd also love it if you go over to Apple Podcasts, give us a star rating review. Of course, you can find us all over social media, the 602 Club on X Twitter. You can also find us on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can find the entire network on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. You can also find us online at trek.fm, as well as the Babel Conference, which is our listeners-only discussion group on Facebook. And we would really appreciate it if you go under Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm and become part of our team by supporting us over there. But Christy, so I wanted to ask you this. As we come back inside to an Inside Out 2, before we even saw the film, I'm very interested to just kind of see, you know, what you were thinking about this movie, it's always hard when you come to a sequel. Sometimes you're really excited for it, and then sometimes, you know, you find yourself on the other side. And so where were you when they announced that, hey, we're doing Inside Out 2? Were you excited about it? Did you want to see it? How were you feeling?
Yeah, I was initially somewhat excited about it. I mean, you know, I'm not usually a fan of a lot of sequels. Obviously, there are exceptions, like franchises that we love. But I wasn't sure where they would go with it, because I would say, you know, you could feel like the first movie was self-contained and didn't necessarily need a sequel. But you could definitely see how they could do endless sequels showing different periods throughout a kid's life. So it made sense, but I wasn't sure if they would have enough good stuff again to go on. So we'll see. I don't know. How did you feel coming into it? Were you excited?
Yeah, this is really interesting to me, because coming into this, I thought to myself, okay, I don't know what to feel about this, because I really enjoyed it, and anybody can go back to listen to our episode that we did on Inside Out. I adore that movie. I think it's legitimately one of Pixar's best films. It's a movie that I think incredibly captures, you know, what it means to grow up and to be somebody who's growing up. And you know, I think it does a great job of kind of visualizing the difficulty of how hard it is to grow up, right? Like, and the frustrations mm-hmm. that go along with that. And then, of course, the mental strain that comes along with that as your brain is learning all these new things and trying to handle all this new stuff. And, you know, I think, just worried coming into this. I do feel as though they had set it up basically to know that they would probably do a sequel at some point, because, you know, the whole thing was about, oh, puberty, you know, there was the joke there at the end of the first film. Mm-hmm. Just in case anybody wants to listen to our previous episode, it was 276. But I think I've come to the point where I don't necessarily trust Pixar at this point. I haven't really loved anything that they've done since Coco. That was quite a long time ago. There's been a few of their films which I just haven't really even been interested in that have come out that I haven't seen. But this one, of course, you know, because it was Inside Out, I wanted to see it, and I want it to be good. And, you know, I'm also worried, okay, are they going to take something that I really loved and kind of screw it up, you know? Mm-hmm. Because I think you said it really well. The first one was kind of pretty perfect, and it didn't necessarily need a sequel. And the problem with sequels is mostly the worst you can do is make it worse, you know? Make it really suck. And I was worried that was going to happen. And so that's, I mean, when we're talking about a movie about feelings, that's how I was feeling coming into this. It was very trepidatious. And I didn't know exactly how to feel about it other than like, please don't take something I love and make it terrible. And
right.
You know, in some ways, you know, this movie, of course, is about Riley hitting the age of 13 and hitting puberty and growing up. And life goes from what we think of as more simple to extremely complicated. And I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously this is a movie about a young girl. And so how did you feel like they did with bringing to life all of the complicated, uncomfortable emotions that you get as you, you know, hit that age?
Well, the first thing I will say is, since you mentioned our main character, Riley, is a girl, I'm glad that they steered away from talking about the, you know, female cycle that starts once you hit puberty.
Oh, they already did that in Turning Red, so that's fine.
Right. But I think, too, here it was more important, I think, that they wanted to make it relatable to all kids rather than really focus on her specifically being a girl. So I think that worked in their favor, just focusing on the important parts that all kids would have in common going through puberty. And that there are these common things that occur where it's like you constantly bounce from one emotion to another suddenly. You know, you suddenly have an increase and change in your hormone levels, which cause those things. And then also, you know, things like acne, you saw the little spot on her chin. I really liked the metaphor that they did for this with having the guys come in doing construction and knocking down everything that there was before to make way for something new. Because it is like you're rediscovering who you are as a person all over again. Because before, everything was very pure and innocent, you know, as a child, you know, either what your parents tell you or, you know, what you've experienced so far. And at this point, you're really suddenly realizing the bigger world out there and new things you'll have to deal with.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they do a really good job about kind of bringing to life the struggle it is to grow up and to deal with things that you know, you have to learn how to handle. I think that's the thing that we all deal with. It's incredibly difficult to all of a sudden have all of these, you know, the first movie was kind of about the idea of learning that mixing emotions can be really important, and it can it's something to where we learn that something that is sad and joyful all at the same time can happen, and you know, the moment that the change hits us all, that seems like child's play, right? It seems like the easiest thing in the world when we start having all of these other conflicting emotions, especially about how we deal with our friends. What do we do about, you know, disappointments that happen, big disappointments, you know, what happens when we have to deal with, you know, where our morals might be challenged in a way that they weren't before, or, you know, big emotions like anxiety and those kind of things. And so, you know, I think the beauty of this, like you said, obviously our main character is female and a girl. And so they could have gone a direction where this spoke mainly just to, you know, one sex. And I think what they do is they create a dynamic that really does allow anybody to feel this, right? You know, because what Riley's going through about, you know, the fact that she's going to be going to a different school than her two best friends, and then the struggle of like, okay, how do I fit in then at this new school? How am I going to have, am I going to have any friends? All of those type of things don't have anything to do with being a boy or a girl, right?
Right. I think those are things. Am I going to make the team?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All that stuff is stuff that anybody can experience. And so what I think that does is it really helps this movie be able to, like you said, speak to anybody. But I think as well, like the first movie, they really bring this to life in a way that puts you back in that place, you know, puts you back in that place where you remember what this was like when you were turning 12 or 13 or 14 and everything was changing in your life. And that's incredible that they were able to kind of capture, I think, a lot of that magic from the first film and then continue that into, you know, this next big life change.
Mm-hmm. What? Well, yeah. And even show, you know, relearning things like right and wrong, even though technically she does believe she's a good person, that when the circumstances were different, she made a different decision than she would have previously with looking at the coach's notebook. I will say I didn't really like that they didn't have her get caught or anything. I think that was an important lesson that they should have included. Because, you know, they made so much emphasis on that being wrong behavior, and it is objectively wrong. So, you know, I think it is kind of like they were not condoning it, but showing she got away with it and learned what she needed to do to get better. And I think they should have stuck more to what could she do to get better on her own.
Yeah, it is interesting because you mentioned, and this is a big part of the film, which is Riley dealing with her core beliefs, you know, the what really shapes our very being, right? What we believe about ourselves, what we believe about our world, what we believe about those around us, you know, what we even believe about the defining characteristics of what's right and wrong, where we draw those lines. And I really appreciated the way in which this movie, I think, deals with that. I think it does a pretty good job of, you know, and mainly because one of the things that it shows is the way in which we can be driven by emotions to reject our core beliefs or what we should believe just because emotionalism is what's driving us. And what I really appreciated about, I thought this movie did great, was showing that we need to lean into something more concrete. You know, we need to learn, lean into the way our experiences begin to shape us. They kind of teach us wisdom, which is knowledge rightly applied, not emotionalism, so that when we are driven by emotions, we have something concrete to fall back on instead of something that is, you know, constantly changing, right? Our emotional state changes all the time. You know, it could, right now, both you and I could be going through many emotional states at one moment, right? And if we were to try and define our core self by what we're feeling, well, that's going to change every 5 minutes, and that would make us very unstable people, and it would also mean that we would have a very difficult time understanding who we are. And so what I loved about this movie is that the core beliefs are things that are based upon a sum of all of our experiences, as they showed, and then taking those experiences and being able to understand then, okay, where's the dividing line between right and wrong in all of these experiences, and then using that. And, you know, I think even as well, we kind of see that there's some great stuff that comes along with, you know, Riley kind of learning from her parents and her past experiences with her parents, and how important they are in teaching, you know, kids about our core beliefs and right and wrong. So, you know, I thought that was something that was really good. It is interesting, like you said, that she doesn't get caught for that. And in some ways, too, that was one of those things where I felt like it was interesting that she didn't get caught, because her character defining moment then became about how she was able to kind of overcome that through remembering, basically. It's almost like the Lion King, remember who you mm-hmm. are, you know, like to remember who she is. And then with the help of her friends, right, with people that also help remind her who she is. That was kind of great too. So I can see what you're saying. It is kind of weird that we never get her caught, but it's almost like that happens in life, right? And whether or not we get caught for what we do, can we have a moment where we can like still learn from that? That, you know, it was wrong or any of those type of things. So one of the things I like about it is that it does feel pretty real in that sense, the situation that we're in.
And that's a good way of looking at it, you know, that it's sort of that saying, do you do the right thing even when no one's watching?
Yes, exactly.
So there's still a lesson to be taught there. So I appreciate mm-hmm. that. Thank you. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah. No, I like the way you put that, like that, because, well, too, right? That's wisdom, right? That mm-hmm. wisdom is being able to understand the knowledge we have rightly applied, and then character is what we do when nobody's watching, right? Mm-hmm. And so 100%, and that's kind of something that Riley ends up learning here.
And I love that visual way of telling these things through the little helix that made up Riley as a person, mm-hmm. you know, that was floating above the little pedestal that Joy mm-hmm. rips off and is later replaced by anxiety. So that shows in a visual way who Riley is with all of her core beliefs combined, and what can happen if you let, like you were saying, one emotion rule everything and override your core beliefs and cause you to make bad decisions or to act differently than your character usually would be. And how important it is to have everything good and bad that we like or dislike about ourselves to make us who we are. That even the bad things taught you something. And that through puberty, and hopefully, again, later in life, you can continue to learn from those things.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love that you said that, because one of the things that we do see in the film is, you know, kind of tangential to the core beliefs is the way in which in her mind, Joy has been taking all of these kind of negative experiences and emotions that she's experienced and kind of thrown them to the back of her mind, you know, to forget them. And one of the things that becomes very important then about this is that all of these experiences kind of come flooding back, right, because of what's happening to her. And the beauty of that is that we need to remember all of the experiences we have. Because when we forget certain things, like you mentioned, even the bad things, right, that doesn't mean we can't learn anything from bad stuff, right? In fact, most of us tend to learn more from our difficult or trialed experiences than we would if we just only had good experiences, You know, very seldom do you hear people say, man, the time I learned the most in my life was when I was so happy and so joyful and, you know, no, what do you tend to hear? I went through this really difficult time, you know, this happened and then this happened and I was like, I don't know what's going on. And like, I found my way through it and I just really found an inner strength. I didn't know, you know, that's mm-hmm. what people say. They don't ever say like, yeah, I've been happy my whole life. And like, you learn nothing that way as a human being. And so to be right. the best versions of ourselves, you know, we truly do need to remember all of those experiences and be able to kind of put them through the sifter and see, okay, what went right, what went wrong, you know, and they really do, you know, kind of make us who we are. And so I loved that part of the film. Really glad mm-hmm. you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, and I like that this kind of leads into other tangential things that go along with it, like not only having bad circumstances, but things that cause you to mature mm-hmm. in a good way.
Right.
And I think specifically mm-hmm. of Riley goofing off with her friends when the coach comes in and is ready to give instructions.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you have to learn that yes. you would have done as a kid that you can't do once you're going into high school.
Right. Yeah.
That there are rules and sometimes that means you're following them and, you mm-hmm. know, learning that as you go. And that's maturity.
Right. Well, and two, right, that is the wisdom to understand when I'm in a certain place, what is the correct behavior for this certain place, right? You know, goofing right. off with your friends is fine when you're just chilling, and it's not when you're in the middle of a important practice for a camp and this team, and, you know, the whole point is whether or not you might possibly be able to make the team, but what are you going to learn and all those things. Just like, yeah. On top of that, I think too, as you were talking about the idea of maturing, and I think the thing that was really struck by as well is by how being driven by emotions like anxiety and those type of things, they drive Riley so inward that she doesn't really care about anyone else other than trying to get what she wants and what she thinks is best for her. So it doesn't, in the end, it does not matter who she has to hurt or what she has to do to get what she wants, you know, and in many ways, many of the things that we've talked about in the show for years, you know, are we going to be driven by selfishness? Or are we going to be driven by selflessness? And that's something mm-hmm. that we really do see here in this film, that these type of emotions cause her to think about herself and herself only. So not only is she harming herself in that, but she's also harming every single person around her, because what she cares about it, by being driven by those emotions and allowing them to control her, is only herself. And she's not actually getting the thing that she's so afraid that she'll lose, right? And that's the thing I also think, you talked about maturity. That's part of maturing, right? Mm-hmm. Is learning the way in which to operate with everybody else around us, and that the focus solely on ourselves actually in many ways becomes the detriment to getting the things that we want most from other people, which is to love, which is to be known and loved, right? It's very hard to know and love somebody who is just seems like a complete narcissist.
Right. And I mean, that's showcased case in point where she trips a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's still a hockey game and hockey can be kind of rough, but you know when somebody deliberately trips someone to get them yeah. out of the way. And that's what she did. And I like that they even show when you become ruled by one emotion and then get into a certain state when it comes to anxiety, specifically what it's like to have a panic attack. I mean, that was essentially what was happening when anxiety was running so fast in circles that it was like a tornado of electricity and she couldn't let go. She was paralyzed by her anxiety and her heart was racing. And it's at that point, as someone who's experienced them before, it's involuntary. You've gotten yourself into such a spiral of thoughts of what could go wrong that you're having a physical reaction to it that you can't control. And the only way out of it is to basically get back inside your own head and realize that you can control your breathing, slow your heart rate, get yourself out of that spiral a little bit at a time, and then feel better. So I really liked that they included something like that, because that's often when kids experience something like that for the first time, if they're going to end up having those issues. And gives you a brief glimpse into what they would now call neurodivergent people, without having to delve too much into that can of worms of like ADHD and anxiety disorders and stuff like that. But it's a little bit.
Yeah, one of the things that I loved you bringing that up, the idea of, you know, being controlled by these toxic emotions like anxiety, right? And any emotion that just has complete reign of us, and not being tempered by any other emotion or any other part of ourselves, any kind of self-control, is going to be toxic and it's going to destroy us, right? It could be anxiety, it could be depression, you know, any of these emotions, right? You know, I think, and that's kind of one of the things that the Inside Out movies have done a great job of showing, is the way in which emotions and our psyche is kind of meant to work in concert with one another, you know, all these things. And so when any one thing is driving the show, that's not good. And I think it really lends itself to learning something very important that just doesn't get talked about very often, you know, which is the idea of self-control. How do we learn to control our emotions so they don't get away with us, right? And I think, you know, one of the ways we kind of see Riley learn that, as she's kind of dealing with this for the first time, like you mentioned, is, right, what does she have to do? She has to slow herself down. And that she has to remind herself of what's actually true, you know? The things, again, when we were talking about with the core belief thing, it's what's true, what's concrete, what is unchangeable that she knows, right? What does she know? She knows her parents love her, and she knows her friends love her, right? And it's when we allow these other emotions and other things to begin to kind of run rampant and control our lives, you know, regardless of whether or not they're true or not, you know, and most of the times when we're letting our anxiety run away with us, it is that just catastrophizing to the point of driving us crazy. And it's either, you know, again, we're trying to plan for every single part of the future. And that's the other thing, too. And I think, you know, it's probably a, in some ways, kind of a minor part of the film because they don't bring it up hugely. But part of this is also learning what you can and can't control.
Right.
You know, and what we see here is that, you know, Riley is having to learn a pretty good lesson about the fact that you can't control everything in your life, you know, and the only thing you can control is the type of person that you want to be, right? And that type of person can be somebody who cares only about themselves and getting what they want, and, you know, damn the consequences, basically. And, of course, then end up lonely and hurt and have no one. Or you can be a person that is someone who understands the truth of who you are and just tries then to show other people the type of love and respect and honor that they would want. And, you know, if people don't want to do that for you, well, you know, you can't control them, right? And so, yeah, I was really struck by the way in which they do a great job, I think, of helping kids see the toxicity of these type of emotions and what they do to a person if we let them just run rampant without any self-control of ourselves.
Right. You definitely hit the nail on the head with how the movie focuses on what you can and can't control, and that's something that's also learned as you grow up. And I liked, too, that they focused a little bit as well on how that relates to peer pressure, for example, with her new potential friends talking about what their favorite bands were. And then also with it was a huge moment when they have Joy specifically say, maybe as you age, you have less joy. And that was a profound moment for me in the film, because you wouldn't ever want that to be the case, that the things that bring you joy may change, but that's something that you should have still throughout the rest of your life in some way, because otherwise what is life worth living for, you know? And so I'm glad that they bring that back around to helping Riley relearn how to be her best, but also not be selfish in an effort to have joy again instead of anxiety.
No, I love that you brought that point up, because that's the thing. If we allow these toxic emotions to run rampant in our lives with no control, the very thing that we do run into becomes having less joy, right? Because we're never going to be able to find it, because we're always searching for and trying to get the thing we don't have, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said, what we see here is Riley realizing that to enjoy the things that she does have, to learn the things that she can't control, and to let go of the things that she can't. You know, it's kind of like the AA prayer, right? You know, that's kind of what Riley is learning throughout this film. And to take joy in the things that are around you, mm-hmm. you know, that is incredibly important, because we can become people who are so wrapped up in everything we don't have that we actually miss what's right in front of our faces. You know, It kind of reminds me, there's a great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and the captain's son, Sisko, is so focused on writing the story. His dad's like, it's life, Jake. You'll miss it if you don't look up every once in a while. And that's that. It's like, it's life, Riley. If you don't pull yourself out of your own emotions, you're just going to miss everything that's in front of you. And so I really appreciated that. And I think, you know, Chrissy, that's one of the things that this is a movie that is about learning what it means to navigate life and, you know, having to make the hard choices in life about friends, the type of friends we're going to have, the type of friend we're going to be, how we're going to treat people, what we're going to try to accomplish in our lives and how we're going to try and do that. These are all the lessons that Riley is having to learn to navigate in a very difficult and tumultuous season of life.
And I do think that it's so important how they show her going through the bad decisions as well as realizing the right choice.
Yes.
And actually, they even had a behind-the-scenes group of kids that were called Riley's Crew that were helping to make sure that these things were consistent with what they feel they're going through as well. So I think it's great that they had a focus group working on this of kids. To really talk about, you know, if it's been a while since you've been a kid, what it's like. And that this is such a great visual representation of that experience. And I hope that tons of kids get to go and see it, because I think it could be so helpful in preventing potential bad choices for kids, or helping them express themselves better with their parents and their friends. You know, realizing that we're all a mixture of all of these emotions inside. And, you know, I think it's kind of funny now to think of your emotions as all sitting at a table controlling different buttons.
Yeah. Well, I like that you mentioned that, because that is something to me that I think is really important in the film, which is she admits in some ways what's happening to her friends, but more importantly, she apologizes, right?
Yes.
And then she's forgiven. And in the world, honestly, where we're seeing so little of that happen today, of people saying I'm sorry, but people being willing then to apologize, being willing to accept that apology. You know, I think that's the sad thing, is that, you know, not only are people not willing to say I was wrong, but then when people do that, people aren't willing to forgive. And what I love in the film then, in this navigation of life, what do we see? Riley realizes, okay, the person that I want to be is a person who cares about their friends, who loves their friends, treats their friends well. And I did that terribly. And I got to apologize. I got to admit where I was wrong. And I kind of love that, right? I think that's just incredibly important for kids to be able to see, that in navigating life, you got to admit when you're wrong. And then as a good friend, then it's okay to be like, yeah, well, I appreciate you saying you're wrong. That means a lot to me. And I forgive you.
Right. And to move forward from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. I think it's so important that she learned that at this point and didn't just continue down the path of completely dismissing people just to get what she wanted. Mm-hmm. And realizing that you also need to decide, like you said, who you want to be ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And taking accountability is a big part of maturity. And, you know, sometimes it's hard for us to do that because we feel like we've made such a massive mistake. We can't admit failure.
Exactly.
But it's actually more appealing and makes you more human and relatable to other people to be able to say, I made a mistake and I'm going to do these things to prevent doing the same mistake again in the future. And I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, it reminds me of the song that Switchfoot sang years ago, Are You Who You Want to Be? Right? Mm-hmm. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? And that's the question that we all face as we grow up, right? Are we who we want to be? And what kind of person do we want to be? And how do we decide what type of person that is? You know? And I think what I like so much about this movie is it seems to be flying in the face of our culture, which just says, be whatever you want to be, regardless of the cost and regardless what anybody else thinks. And regardless of the relationships you have to lose to be that, like, this movie seems to be saying, no, that's not what makes a good life. That's not what makes for being a good person. And I think most of the things that we see in this movie are just right on target with what it actually does mean to be a good person, which is somebody who truly cares about other people and doing what is right by those people, and not just thinking about ourselves. And in fact, when we think only about ourselves and we let ourselves be controlled only by our emotions, that's when we becomes the most dangerous for us. That's most likely when we're going to find ourselves to be the most alone.
And speaking of that, I'm glad you said that's when we'll find ourselves the most alone, because the other piece to this I thought of was case in point with Joy trying to run the show internally for Riley, to the point that she even has a breakdown and doesn't know what to do. We have to realize that we don't live in a silo, that it requires teamwork in life to be able to accomplish things. And it actually works better that way than if you try to do everything alone. Yeah. And when Joy finally listened to what the other emotions had to offer as a team, they were able to find an answer out of things, to get them out of things. And, you know, brought in Pouchy. But, you know, as a group, then you have other ideas to bounce off of each other instead of just sitting there alone and going, there's no way out.
Right. Well, and isn't that really, you know, what makes us a more fully rounded and grounded individual, is one whose emotions work in concert with one another, right?
Right.
But isn't that what just also makes us a more fully rounded individual, is when we're able to work with others as well? And I love that. I think that that is, again, this is the thing that they do really well in the film. And so what did you think about, you know, we had some new voices here, with envy and ennui, embarrassment, anxiety. We actually had a completely new voice for disgust, because it wasn't Mindy Kaling. She was not able to come back here, which I thought was interesting too. So how did all the new emotions and the new voices work for you in the film?
So first thing I want to say is I think it's so funny if you actually look at the visual representations of each emotion next to the actors and actresses that play them, there is somewhat of a character resemblance to the actor, which I thought was funny. Obviously not completely, because they're supposed to be make-believe emotions, not people.
Sure.
But I thought it was particularly funny that, you know, if you look at anxiety and then go look at Maya Hawke's picture, you're like, yeah, I see it. A little bit, you know, not in a bad way, but just some resemblance.
Right.
But I thought that this was so cool, because obviously going through puberty, it's a massive change, and you get more complex emotions as well, not just new emotions. And I'm glad that they whittled it down to only a couple of new emotions and didn't try to go off down a huge rabbit hole of 20 other emotions. Apparently there were going to be 9 new ones, and they got it down to 4. So I think that was more manageable. But I think that they were important, because we have seen kids that are, but you know, burgeoning teenagers that are suddenly listless and bored with everything, like ennui, or always on their phone, or envious of their other teammates and just want to succeed, or have terrifying embarrassment about everything that they do and think that everything they do is wrong and awkward and they need to just disappear. So I thought all of these were reasonable and a manageable number to add. And then interesting to see them bounce off of each other. What about you?
I thought all of them were great, you know. And the beauty was, too, is that I honestly didn't even realize that Mindy Kaling had been changed to Liza Lapiria, which was great. The fact that I did not realize that, she did an excellent job of just continuing exactly what you would have expected. I think, you know, obviously anxiety is the new standout emotion, in the sense that she gets the most to do. And Maya Hawke was perfect in the role. You know, I think her voice is just perfect for it too. You know, and just the way she brings that manic energy that is a completely different type of manic energy than Amy Poehler gives to Joy. So because she really is kind of the exact opposite. And I think what was beautiful too, in that is that the way in which, you know, Anxiety and Joy realize, you know, what they both want is what's best for Riley. They are going about it in completely different ways, but actually when they work together, they can complement one another, you know? I thought all of the emotions that were added were great, you know, and I'm glad, like you said, that they did not add 9 new emotions. I think that would have been absolutely ridiculous to do. It would have completely bogged down the movie. And I think these were just enough. You know, I think having nostalgia be there as the punchline for a few great jokes was fantastic.
Yes.
I think all of these were pretty phenomenal, and they just did a good job of utilizing all of them. You know, I think I loved embarrassment just because of the way in which they portrayed embarrassment that we all feel, you know, like all right. of, you know, embarrassment's one emotion of embarrassment was exactly how we feel inside. Like, I just wish I could crawl into a hole and like nobody could see me right now. And so I thought that was pretty awesome. I think everybody did a great job. And that's one of the things that they do a good job with in these films is casting voices that I think really bring to life what they're trying to bring to life. And to me, I think the beauty of it is that the voice cast here, it's not just about casting big names, you know, and that's something that I think a lot of animated features have, you know, sadly fallen into the trap of, we just need to cast a name that everybody knows, mm-hmm. instead of casting the voice that actually fits.
Right.
And that's the thing that I think they really get right here, is that all of these voices actually fit the emotion that you're going for, which is really important in a movie about emotions, right? But I also think that all animated features should really go back to this and think more about the voice that's going to come across, because animation, the voice makes it, right? Like that, if you don't have the voice, you don't have anything. And mm-hmm. so I think to me, that's the thing that all of these voices did perfectly, is they brought to life the emotion that they were meant to in a way that felt completely real and completely right. And I liked them all. So, the maker, you know, that they did not overload this film with too many new emotions, because although, you know, right at that change of puberty in life, we all experience a lot more. I think it would have just overloaded the film in a way that would have just kind of muddied the message of what they're trying to do with the movie. You don't want to do that in a film, especially one aimed at mainly kids, but you know, everyone involved. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and I did you notice as well how the emotions that interacted best together are emotions we often experience together?
Yes.
Like embarrassment and sadness.
Yes.
That was great. And fear telling anxiety, oh, we're going to be friends.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because what is anxiety but fear at a, you know, up to 11?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So I just wanted to point that out too, that I thought it was great to see how mm-hmm. all of the planning of how the emotions would interact was clearly intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great call, which is one of the things where I thought about this idea of them kind of mining the mind, and they've been doing this since the first movie, and creating all these spaces in the mind and giving visualization to that. You mm-hmm. know, I thought that that was another thing that they kind of knocked out of the park once again.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the visual representation of the ridges in the brain by the shape of the filing cabinets where the memories go was really neat. I loved the addition of the sarcasm.
Yes.
Which is a chasm.
Yes.
Was great.
Fantastic.
Because let me tell you, I've got a lot of chasms in my brain. There's a lot of sarcasm in there. And the stream of consciousness and the back of the mind and all of that. And I really enjoyed the vault that was all about like being the best bank possible where they keep your secrets safe.
Mm-hmm. I did too. With, you know, her still loving the kids show with Pouchy, or that her, you know, she had a crush on that one video game character, which, I mean, both sexes have had that. And so, or that her biggest one was like, I love that at the very end, the deep, dark secret was that she had burned a hole in the rug, and then Joy was like, whew, I thought it was going to be that time we peed in the pool. So, but I mean, you, like you said, it's so incredibly smart because that's exactly how we feel, that we've got those things that we're not going to tell anyone ever because we just feel like nobody would ever see us the same way again. And that's beautiful. I think they did such a good job with bringing that to life.
Yeah. And I love Imagination Land. I think that it was so fun that they had Mount Crushmore, because we all have one of those and the faces are all different.
Yes. Yes. That was very funny.
So everything was still relatable to everyone. And I thought that was so fun. And just really also, I think, in a simpler way, teaching kids about these things in a way that they would understand, where it's not, you know, psychobabble language about how the brain works.
Exactly. No, that's an excellent point, actually. And I think a big part of that was also, you know, we talked about the whole idea of the core of our being, our core beliefs, right? And I thought that they did a really good job of bringing to life how we kind of come up with the beliefs that drive us, right? And what do we see? Right, the beliefs that drive us come from our vast amount of experiences, and the culmination of all those experiences coming together to create these core beliefs about ourselves. And I think that's really cool. I think they did a great job of showing how that works. And again, you know, the visualization of this stuff is the thing that's the most important really in the movie. You know, you want to bring this to light in an interesting way so that people are enjoying what they're watching. And I think, you know, that's the thing I love about these films, is that they do it in such an interesting way. You see the stream of consciousness and you're like, that's exactly what it feels like. All of a sudden I'm just thinking about
broccoli.
Whatever. Broccoli. Yes. What are they doing to her up there? Which I understand. I don't hate broccoli, but it's like not the thing I want to be thinking about. So all of that is pretty fantastic. So Christy, I'm fascinated then through our conversation of the movie. I feel like we've only really had effusive praise for the film. So where do you land then with your ratings for Inside Out 2?
So I really had a good time seeing this and think it had so much emotional depth to it, not to be too on the nose. And I would say it's a nearly perfect movie. I'm going to take off half a point just because for me, I wish that there had been a little bit more to go on besides just hockey camp being the crux of all of this. But I think that it still had so much going for it, and I'm dying to hear what my 10 and 12 year old nephew and niece thought about it. So I give it a 4.5 out of 5 streams of consciousness.
Nice.
Because it was so fun, but also so meaningful, and really explored a lot of important things in a way that's digestible for kids.
I love that. I'm 100% right there with you. I think Inside Out, the original, is a 5-star film. I do think this is 4.5 out of 5 stars. I do think that the biggest issue is it's hard to be as impactful as that first movie was, but I do think that this actually did a really good job. It didn't let me down. I had a great time watching it. And to me, this is 4.5 out of 5 locked secrets because it, you know, and I think part of that is that there is a bit of a difference, like, of our transition from you know, kid to, like, teenager, you know. There is something that is, I think, really poignant about that first Inside Out and what that lesson is like, you know, to realize that emotions that are seem different can also be really important, you know, like sadness and joy. And this, I think, just doesn't quite have the emotional punch. Again, not to be on the nose, but it's just not quite the same, right? And it's not really their fault, I don't feel like. I would say that I think a little bit unlike what you just said about, you know, just wanting more than just maybe hockey camp, it did feel like to me that they had found a good way to try to make this very complex issue as simple as possible, while at the same time allowing there to be the complexity by just kind of having it be in this confined space of this, you know, few days at hockey camp where, you know, Riley's change has begun and it's really smacking her in the face, right? You know, she's getting knocked upside the head with all these emotions she doesn't know how to deal with. Also a very new environment, but it's also very contained, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. and so I think actually that kind of helps because I'm trying to think of how else they might have done the story and not feel like you would have been completely maybe overloaded if you didn't try to contain some of this the same way that they contained having, you know, instead of 9 new emotions, you know, they just have the 4 that we do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm also hopeful. I don't really think we need to see another Inside Out after this.
Yeah, I think, you know, this was kind of the perfect time period, like we said, where you could delve into issues that are still the same for both boys and girls without having to get into the gender specific things. I think the next one, it would be a lot harder to do that because you're going from teen to adulthood and that's just part of it. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they would find a way to do it. I'd be curious. I don't know if I'd say excited, but curious. But again, felt like they intended here to make the best movie possible standing on its own. And that's mm-hmm. what you really need to do.
Yeah, I agreed. I sense that that's one of the things that actually hurt Turning Red was the fact that you didn't have a movie that was really for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, you had a movie that was specifically for girls, which that's not a terrible thing, but it's also going to be difficult to have that be something that everybody wants to see or that right. everybody is going to connect with. And I think they maybe actually learned their lesson and not doing that by allowing, you know, Inside Out 2 to be something that they could all get, that everybody could understand. And so, mm-hmm. well, Christy, this has been so much fun. Like, I'm really excited. We've got some other great movies that are coming out this summer that we're going to be talking about. But if everybody wants to catch up with you and see what else you've got going on, where would they find you?
You can find me on Letterboxd, Instagram, and still on Twitter, but just haven't been as active, at Bespin Bell, and of course on Facebook. And if you'd like to listen to a finished podcast I have with my friends Amanda and Teresa called Sabers and Spells, that's over on the Skywalking Through Neverland Network. And what about you?
Well, I am all over social media under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network outside the 602 Club with a bunch of shows. I've got Warp 5, The Orb, The Artificial Tango, Saddle Up, and you'll sometimes find me on Literary Treks. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network. I've got a completed show with Drea Kaufman about Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, called Owl Post. And then you'll find me doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear? Thank you.